Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist with a special part two interview for you with former Assistant HUD Secretary Dylan Reed and Company partner and the publisher of the Solari Report, Catherine Austin Fitz. Today, Catherine will go deep on the war of the digital ID, CBDC, mind control, and the UFO file. Can we find the answers in time? Let's go ask former Assistant HUD Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
When we look at that as a political reality in the United States, for example, this is a very unpopular administration. You know, the disasters in Afghanistan, Ukraine, inflation, the whole bit. When you look at that and you see the rise of them talking about COG, and then suddenly it shows up on the Bilderberg chart, you know they're ready to press that button.
So, you know, here's the thing, I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
When they press that button, they're going to hurt themselves globally. In other words, you have a domestic population that you have to manage, but then you have international relations and networks that you have to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And when they press that button, it's going to be a sign of tremendous weakness.
Interesting. Yes.
And that's going to hurt them. That's going to hurt them internationally.
Someone in there wants that option. In the media, they love to talk about it now. Pelosi loves
really?
To talk about it. Oh, really? Yeah. There's all kinds of, you know, there are all these articles now. They're like, hey, continuity of government might, you know, this might happen, you know. And meet your new commander, you know. General Van Herk from NORTHCOM would be the combatant commander of the United States. So there's something floating out there that is saying, well, this is desirable. You know, or this could happen. So get, you know, be prepared. It could be a Russian cyber attack.
You mean a cyber attack?
Yeah.
Attributed to the Russians.
Attributed to the Russians. Exactly. In quote.
I'm sure the Israelis would never do that. I'm sure. Especially if U.S. intelligence asked them to do it, they would never do it. Anyway, if you look who's leading, they're trying to hold things together according to their plan. And the plan's not working well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so you have these different efforts to assert central control.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep trying to find a pathway through to complete central control. And if enough people refuse to allow complete central control, then it will fail. So there is a huge tension going on globally as to, even if there is central control, you know, who's going to manage it in the current countries and regions?
Yes.
And you know, with what models? And so that's a competition. But then you also have a competition between the leadership in every country and the population that doesn't understand and doesn't like this.
Exactly.
Right. So this is a very organic evolutionary process. And right in the middle of it, the question is, if immune systems have been seriously depressed in, you know, a billion plus people globally, what's going to happen?
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say this, but, you know, if you just look at what has come out about the biolabs in Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
and you realize this is, you know, 10% of the biolabs built around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the danger in an implosion in a place like the Ukraine, you know, when you have nuclear facilities and nuclear plants and biowarfare labs and payrolls implode,
mm-hmm.
do you know what can happen?
Absolutely.
Well,
yes.
One of the reasons I was told that they wouldn't let the Russian government implode totally during the rape of Russia is they didn't want the Russian mafia to get the nuclear weapons.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
there was a lot of talk about that. And actually, Ukraine was in the center of that discussion because so many of the weapons were there.
Well, it's very interesting because while Biden's screaming for gun control in the United States, you know, we're turning over weapons to criminals in the Ukraine while we're trying to steal them and take them from the honest people in the United States.
Amazing.
And that kind of says it all. I mean, here's the problem. Once you become dependent on a criminal model and centralization, you know, what you can do is double down on more centralization and more criminal control. And the problem is that's destroying the productivity in the general economy. And a lot of people were willing to go along with the criminality as long as they got their check.
Right.
But now the China trade's over, and now, you know, the chicken is coming home to roost, and now they're not getting their check. You know, it's right. interesting. I'll never forget calling into the United States about 6 months ago, and I said, somebody was saying, you know, everybody's furious about, you know, the COVID lies. I said, what, you know, why did they all of a sudden, they said, because you should see what's happening with the price of gas. And that's because the political equation for since World War II is, you give me a check and the story of why I'm good. I'm a good Christian. I have nothing to do with it. I'm not doing the war. I'm not doing the organized crime. I'm a good Christian, but I got the check, right? I'm good. So I get two things. I get a check and I get the story of I am good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give me the story of I am good, but no check or my check is going down in value, that's not the equation. That's not the deal, right?
They must know that.
Yeah, they do.
And so do you think this other thing is then a steady push for depopulation to have less people turn on them?
You know, Daniel, I don't. In 1998, the reason I started to talk so loudly about the missing money was I knew that if you can't balance the budget by financial means, you have to lower the retirement age. You have to lower life expectancy. It is the mathematically is the only way to balance the budget. So it was a fait accompli that they were going to abrogate their obligations in retirement if we didn't do something. And I thought it was an emergency in 1998. And I was shocked and amazed every year since then to learn that, you know, most other people didn't see it.
Yeah.
Didn't feel like it was like, you know, mañana. We can worry about that tomorrow. The government's always been corrupt, mañana.
Right. But there's something very different this time because, yeah, you know, in Rome you had corruption and these, you know, in the Middle Ages you had corruption, but now they have this technology, which they didn't have then. And so it makes it.
Well, they have this technology, but the other thing they have, and, you know, we should talk because the technology is going to lead to some pretty bizarre places if we don't stop this.
Yes.
But we also have a 20-year cycle of disrespect between the population and the leadership in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The more they get away with stuff, the less they respect the general population.
Right.
The more their tricks work, the more the mind control works, the less they, and they've literally become a separate species. They don't respect the average person. And part of it is they can get away with it.
That's incredible, you know, because we're on so many anniversaries this year. It's the 50th anniversary of Watergate in like a week. And, you know, there's the 75th anniversary of the National Security Act and 75th anniversary Roswell. I mean, all these different things and these deep events that have shaped things. And you're right. Each time, it's like we've had less and less ability to come back and, you know, demand honesty and transparency from the government. And the government and those forces manipulating that government, you know, if we want to call it the deep state or Mr. Global, whatever it happens to be, they've been emboldened by our own lack of ability to get that transparency.
So let's get back to mass hypnosis.
Yeah.
Is mass hypnosis, if you've dealt at a deep level with all the deep state tactics, from the surveillance and the mind control to the nuts and bolts of the financial carrots and sticks, to the covert operations, you know, through the courts, through financial mechanisms, through, you know, people running you off the road and poisoning you, all of that. If you look at this fantastically complex control system, which has to be the biggest industry in the world. You know, if you look at the money that is pouring into this industry, it is unbelievable. So here's the biggest industry in the world, and we're all pretending it's not there. And somebody comes along and says, oh, you know, this happened because we all kind of got afraid and lost our minds together in a big mass event. It's like a big mass. We all went crazy together in a big mass clump.
Right. We did it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, we did it. You know, we're, the victims are yet again to blame.
Yes.
But if you look at the extraordinary effort it took to herd everybody one by one into the corral, mm-hmm. I mean, imagine cattle spread over hundreds of millions of miles and you've got to get them all into one pen, you know, and it takes very different tactics to do, you know, some you're trucking in, some you're, you know,
right.
And you get them all in the corral and you say, oh, they're there because of some spontaneous conscious event that they had, you know, they heard a universal whistle and they went mad together. Like, what? Well, think about it. It keeps everybody feeling helpless.
Yeah.
To, in other words, I'm not going to see the control grid and back out in time. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to sit helpless while the control grid continues to build up around me. I mean, it's very clever.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about it is it's coming from the very same people who are saying, we're blowing the lid off this thing, you know, we're exposing where the government is lying to everyone on this. And it's getting actually a lot of play, and it's sort of like the propped up phony opposition.
It's like the blue chicken.
That reminds me so much, because when you get around the UFO thing, all the people from the government coming forward and they're like, that government has to give us transparency on UFOs. I'm like, you are the government. You know, the CIA director.
So here's the funny thing. You know how long and how hard they've fought disclosure on any UFO topic.
Yes.
You know, or, you know, let's take the whole world of black weaponry and invisible weaponry and high-tech weaponry. It's all secret. It's all dark. Okay. But when you have inflation, they would rather have a hearing on UFOs than have you pay attention to inflation. So no matter how afraid they are of disclosure on UFOs, they're more afraid of inflation. Seriously.
Good.
And
call.
If there is one thing that can force more UFO disclosure, it will be the shriekometer trying to get you to, trying to distract you from paying attention to inflation. Really? Really?
Yes. Well, really. It's interesting, too, that the Department of Homeland Security suddenly became interested in UFOs. And most of the hearings were, the people represented there were either CIA or DHS people, which is also a different thing. And at one point, there's a Illinois congressman who stands up, a Republican.
Darren LaHood.
And he says, you know, I think that there should be penalties for people researching this subject. And the guy there who's representing the DOD, Moultrie, he says, yes, we're going to talk to Congress about that. There has to be a way to implement some penalties for people investigating UFOs.
You're kidding.
No. So you have the UFO research field, you know, promoting this thing. Let's get disclosure from the government. And that's the government sitting there saying, we should penalize people for looking into this. And they actually spotlighted amateur interest groups.
Really?
So they might drag me out of here eventually.
No, I think what we should do is anything flying in the sky needs a sign, you know, on it. We can use an acronym. You don't have to pretend we're not here. And on this one, you have to pretend we're not here.
Oh,
so crazy. We know which ones we have to pretend we're not, you know. No, that didn't fly by, you know, because that's a pretend it's not here kind of thing.
But Catherine, isn't that the ultimate irony that the people, you know, who jumped on board with the whole kind of CIA version of disclosure, that all those people now, they're going to criminalize them for looking into it in the first place.
Right, but here's the problem, because remember when I said it's very sort of organic how things go?
Yes.
I mean, you've got Mr. Global saying, look, we want to centralize. And you have all these different players and industries trying to deliver to Mr. Global what he wants. So the healthcare guys are trying to deliver central control and coup through the WHO. And the pharmaceutical guys are trying to, you know, deliver it through injections. And you got the telecom guys trying to deliver it through, you know, all the stuff they're doing with the telecommunication systems. And you got, you know, everybody's trying to deliver, you know, central control or the tools that Mr. Global needs to get the central control. And they're all competing.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so a lot of this is just, you know, it's like dogs barking for pet treats, right?
Yes, exactly. Right.
And so what you get are you get thousands of creative ideas of people trying to deliver central control. And it's just, it's a mess.
Right.
You know, I keep hearing, I used to have this preacher and he would scream it and I loved it. He would, I got a cup, stop banging the table. Sorry about that. He would scream, God does not bless a mess. You know, and you listen to somebody like this guy from DOD and you think, can you imagine trying to enforce against people? You go to Amazon, you buy, you know, a book on UFOs. You know, you buy Corso's book because it looks interesting. The next thing you know, you got an FBI with a subpoena at the door.
Right. You know? I didn't even dream about this in the 50s. I mean, this is really remarkable. And what's fascinating
well,
to
me. You know, you remember what they're trying to institute is slavery.
Yes.
They're not trying that. That's what I try and get people to understand who are worried about collapse. You know, you should pray they collapse. Now, we're not in the middle of a collapse. They're collapsing us.
You know what I mean? Right.
There's a difference between a collapse and a controlled demolition and a bank robbery.
Yeah.
Right. So, right. Okay. So, you can't assume that the vast majority of the people in the system know what they're doing. It's the only way I can describe it. They don't see the big picture. I've never gotten into a boardroom where I couldn't, within a reasonable period of time, help people understand what they were dealing with and how they might, you know, sort of turn and pivot and change.
Right.
Remember all the people who are trying, a lot of the people who are trying to deal with this are on a need to know basis. They don't see the big picture and they're not responsible for the whole. So think of it this way. I once said to one of my partners who had grown up on Montserrat, I said to him, how come I have so many partners who come from islands? And he said, when you're on an island, you realize what goes around comes around. And over many years, even when you're young, you realize you've got to take responsibility for the whole too. Because if you don't, what's going to come around and hit you? And so you really see how what you put out is what comes back. There really is sort of this wheel of karma. Now, the United States has always been such a big country. And in the political process in Washington, everybody believes the effective tactic is to just be out for themselves. So nobody cares about the whole. Nobody takes responsibility for it. Nobody realizes the karma comes back around. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're just, it's like the congressman, I told you about the congressman I was having dinner with, and they rang the bell for appropriations vote. And he got up in the middle of the meal and he turned to me and he said, let's face it, honey, I'm only here to protect my shit. To vote. He came back for dessert, you know, after the vote. But, you know, it's... Everybody's in there fight. It's like a bunch of dogs fighting for a piece of steak.
Yeah.
Is what it feels like when you're in Washington. And everybody's forgotten the whole. And that can't, you know, that can last, Daniel, as long as you print money. But when, and this is why what's happening internationally is so important, because when you can't just print money. And here's the challenge that they've had. And I feel very sorry for the people trying to run the system in some respects. The more you print the money and spend this explosive amount of money on continuity, government, and the national security state, the more the productivity goes down. Right. And so from a productivity standpoint, you're building a negative loop, and it keeps getting worse and worse. And every time it gets worse, you have to solve it by printing more money, which makes it worse, and round you go. And the system drives a lot of the productive people out.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Right. And
that is a very kind of deadly cycle.
Productivity in the first quarter of this year was down 7.5%. And that is the most terrifying statistic. The other one I heard that was very terrifying, Alfie Oakes just did an interview with Tucker Carlson. I don't know if you saw it. He's a successful businessman and entrepreneur in the grocery business in Florida. He's got a vertical operation. His family was in farming and roadside stands. And so he's just built a vertical operation from farms all the way into the the grocery stores. What he said is we need to be prepared for between now, when he did the interview, which I think was a week or two ago, from now and the end of the year, we need to be prepared for 100% increase in our food prices.
Incredible. We've already been seeing it, the dramatic scope of what they're doing with food. So, Catherine, engineered food shortages. This is part of the war plan.
Right. Right. And we're definitely seeing this engineered. You know, there is a war on small farmers. There's an effort to shut them down. And there's an effort. We have a tracker up at Solari for subscribers. It's called Food Risk Tracker. Mm-hmm. We've just been tracking all the, you know, the fires. It's clearly arson of all these different installations. Yes. Yeah, it's a war.
I wanted to ask you about those because it seems like such a, you know, first you had the container stuff where, oh, we can't get these containers because all these ships are hanging out on the coast and we can't get the stuff in and there's no trucks to pull them in and all this nonsense. And then the next thing, oh, the food distribution places are getting, you know, suddenly going on fire, which just seems absurd. And there's no good national coverage on that, unfortunately. What is going on there?
So I think, you know, back to central control, if you're not going to use oil to back the dollar, then the next best thing to use is food. And you can certainly use it domestically. And the Anglo-American Alliance is a real food juggernaut globally. Mm-hmm. If you look at Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the United States all together. So I think there's a push to try and use control of food. And we know there's a major effort in the venture and investment world to bring out synthetic food.
Right.
So you're trying to replace food with synthetic food. And, you know, it's a big, big biotech business. And you're also trying to assert central control. So, I think it's very much related to the trying to maintain and evolve the currency system. Because if you have CBDC and digital IDs and you combine it with control of the food, mm-hmm. you got everybody.
Yes. Yes. No one can get out right at that point. Before we get there, there's an incredible, as you've pointed out, movement towards local farms, farmers markets.
Right.
Put food front and center. There's the ability to do that under these circumstances, to take this crisis and to turn it around to make things more local. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, there is. What you've got to do is you've got to build supply in the food system locally, and you've got to build food liquidity locally. And you also have to build a stable food system. Currency and money system locally. So you need to be able to build equity locally, mm-hmm. and you need to be able to circulate transactions and investment locally. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you need stable governance someplace, whether it's at the county level with the sheriff and the city council or the county executives, or mm-hmm. at the state level. But whether you do it state, and I'm talking United States now, if you get great governance at the state level and then at the, you know, good sheriff and good county level governance, then there's a lot that can be done. And the question politically is, if you are at the state level or you are at the county level, how do you stop the squeeze from the feds?
Right. You pointed out that Maine passed something recently along this line that was really good. And that's kind of a model in a sense.
Right. And Tennessee just took the sales tax off of gold and silver. And that puts us in a position in Tennessee to use gold and silver as a currency. If you go to Solari.com, we have a silver and gold payment calculator. Mm-hmm. And it'll toggle back and forth between gold and silver and 150 different currencies. So if you want to start transacting locally, you know, with cash and coin, including gold and silver, it'll help you do that.
Do you think that those states and counties that get control of some kind of local currency and some kind of local food will be the ones that will survive through all this?
So it's, here's the thing, and I come back to what do people need? And yes, we need food, and yes, we need transactions, but more than anything, what we need is the rule of law. We don't have a financial problem. We don't have an economic problem. We have a governance problem. And what everybody's looking for by saying, can I move to a different jurisdiction, or what everybody's looking for is good governance. Mm-hmm. And because good governance can address the economic and financial and legal problems. But without good governance, there are no financial solutions. There are no economic solutions. You know, so what people need is sufficient governance so they can then transact and be productive and build equity, you know, and grow and eat healthy, nutritious food. Mm-hmm. So step one is the governance. And then step two are doing the things that create the financial liquidity and allow for the development of a healthy, nutritious food system. So, you know, it's a little bit, it's like patting your stomach and, you know, rubbing your head, rubbing your stomach, patting your head, but you got to do three things. You got to do the good governance, you got to do the food, and you got to do the, you know, you got to do the financial liquidity. So, and you got to do it while the feds are trying to talk you into doing, you know, allowing, they're still, you know, the criminal syndicate needs to keep harvesting you to keep their cash flows going.
Right. Absolutely.
So if the Taliban just shut down the drugs in Afghanistan, the poppy, okay, mm-hmm. you know, in Tennessee, marijuana is the biggest crop. Right? so you know, right. And that fentanyl is still coming across, it's flying across the border now that there's nobody to stop it, right?
Unbelievable.
That's the question. In the Biden administration, what's the relationship between shutting down the poppies and the fentanyl flying? You know, if we just shifted everything to China.
Amazing.
We're just shifting the market share. I don't know.
Excellent. Yeah.
I haven't been following the drug business for a while now.
What are they doing, in your opinion? This Biden administration just opening that border and, you know, letting a flood of all different types of people come across, including, you know, what they could portray as terrorists or whoever, but certainly they're allowing in every kind of criminal and everything else. What are they trying to do there?
So there could be many things. So let's just talk about some of the things. I mean, I think they definitely have a deal with different interests in Mexico mm-hmm. to allow certain kinds of people in exchange for investment opportunities in Mexico. It's part of the integration mm-hmm. of the economy. So I think there's definitely a deal with Mexican cartels. That's number one. It's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing is, history has shown that if a population feels overrun by immigration, they still feel the need for government. It's almost like a government marketing plan. Mm-hmm. I also think in many different respects, they need the labor for, you know, sort of different things. So part of it is you're getting, you know, you don't have to raise or educate these young kids, but then if you bring them in, you know, they immediately go to work. And so they pump up some of your different systems and plug some of your holes. So I think some of that. The last thing is you get them to vote for you,
yes.
You know, and you get them to build certain parts of the economy. You get them to vote for you. So I think they're building constituencies
mm-hmm.
at the same time. So I don't think it's one thing or the other. I think it's a combination. And remember, the more chaotic things are, the easier it is for you to control.
That seems like a lot of it, because the crime aspect is rising so dramatically. That's one thing which is a very clear definition between the Trump administration and the Biden administration, is the border issue. The Trump people took a totally different tack in relation to it and took a lot of flack as a result of it.
Right. But remember, if you stop if you stop all the trucks with the fentanyl, then you're messing with who gets the grocery business, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. I hadn't thought of this, but one of the things Alfie Oak said on this interview with Carlson is Carlson said, how come the Mexicans can so underprice the Florida produce? Because if you look at the percentage of produce coming from Florida, it's dropped dramatically over the last 2-3 decades.
Mm-hmm.
And Oak said, oddly enough, it's not it's not so much Mexican labor being cheaper. It's the fact they're shipping it across the border with the fentanyl, and the economics are integrated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
The truck is stopping those trucks and now they're not getting stopped.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm telling you, it's very interesting. If that's the case, the fact that they don't care, they don't mind losing Afghanistan.
Yeah. Yeah. Or leaving $100 billion there in weaponry. That's,
you want to arm the criminals, right?
Yes. Definitely. Since we're on the Biden administration disinformation governance board, something they try to push through Homeland Security, make everyone a domestic terrorist who doesn't say the right thing online. They had a leader of this board, Nina, there for a while. She became a big joke in the media because she had this musical theater background, and they jettisoned her. And now they're trying to replace her with Chertoff, Michael Chertoff from the old, it was the first leader of DHS.
Well, they're trying to do that, and they're also trying to do the January 6th domestic terrorists.
Yes.
And I think we're watching two pushes that they push very hard, and they're going to continue pushing. And my, along with gun control, and my prediction is it's not going to work. Now,
why?
The question is, how many people are going to get killed before it fails?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm a very intuitive person, Daniel, so forgive me. I'm just going to have to give you a sense of this.
Yes.
As I'm watching the reports, and I'm not there, and I'm not talking to people in Washington, so I'm not there. You have a very complex world, and many of the countries who are leading in the G20 are people who are very good at dealing with complex worlds. They have to. And America, because the dollar was supreme, could simplify everything and put it in their framework. And for many decades now, I've watched countries and people around the world frustrated with the oversimplification and the inability to deal with the specifics and the inability to agree to anything that will help them be productive.
Right.
And so you have this productivity backlash. If you think it's great within America, internationally, it's off the charts. And let me give you an example. I'm going to go way off in a tangent and then come back. I'll never forget during the Yellow Jackets in France.
Mm-hmm.
The Yellow Jackets were hardworking people. These were home builders and construction and home improvement people and plumbers and electricians. These are people, who get in and they got to sell it for more than it costs them to make it. And they make it go because they have unbelievable knowledge and skills. And they're frustrated because the centralization is destroying their productivity. So there's a group of them, and Macron decides, so here is an investment banker. It's kind of a KKR kind of guy. And he decides to walk in the street and talk to people. And he's talking to this group of yellow jackets, and there's one of them is a woman, real big, strong, clearly, you know, I don't know what she did. And she's listening to him, and over her whole aura, she's trying to be polite, is this unbelievable look of horror, because she realizes he has not a clue how the economy works.
Oh.
None. And she's looking at him, and or she's getting more and more afraid. And she's trying to be polite and not show it, because she realizes this guy has no clue. He's running everything, and he has no idea how anything works at all. And she's just in this state of unbelievable sort of shock and fear, because she's beginning to realize how terrible things really are. So what you're seeing globally and internationally is watching these tactics, you know, the beatdown, the false flags, the dirty tricks, the school shootings, and they're, it's getting exhausting, it's getting tired, and the respect is falling down, down, down. Mm-hmm. And the things that used to work, they're not working anymore.
Yes.
And it's almost as though the world is looking them at them, and they don't underestimate their ability to kill a billion people. So I'm not saying they're not afraid of the weaponry and the other things. Yeah. But they're looking at them and they're saying, you know, the world is passing them by. There are billions of people who want to be productive. There are billions of people who are paid to get up every morning and make it work. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to do. They like doing it. That's how they get their kicks. And that's a mighty force. And that force is looking at them and saying, you know something? Your time has passed.
Wow.
Right. Now, when billions of people decide your time has passed, you know, the tide recedes in very subtle, inexplicable, unpredictable ways. And so the question is, do they have enough weaponry to make up for that? To, you know, can they?
Exactly. Actually, I was just going to ask you, what is the tactic they'll use to hang on at any price?
Invisible weaponry. They'll use mind control. They'll use weather warfare. They'll use arson. They'll use covert operations. You know, they'll use war by every possible method, mostly covert and invisible.
Mm-hmm. False alien invasion? They would do it.
I'm not saying they wouldn't do it. I just don't see how you could be effective at doing it, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Catherine, I want to go back to war for a moment, because you framed this so, so well in terms of what we're in the middle of right now.
Well, you remember a couple of years ago, I told you, don't worry about collapse, worry about war.
Yes. Yes.
Remember? I told you. Yeah.
Absolutely. We've had this kind of invisible war where you can't exactly see who the enemy is. You've talked about that as well, and being able to identify who that enemy is. So in that whole, where are we now with this? What is it we're looking at in terms of this enemy?
So for some reason, the leadership is absolutely convinced that they need to destroy Russia and bring Russia to heel. And maybe that's because that's the only way they can bring China to heel. You know, we'll see. Okay. But because Russia is the land bridge, you know, it crosses 11 time zones.
Wow.
Right. Well, it goes all the way from the tip of, you know, goes all the way, you know, right next to Japan, all the way across into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So from, you know, from the Pacific down to St. Petersburg and into Europe. So it is the land bridge, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as a rising Asia meets a, you know, the world's largest consumer market, you know, it's dangerous to the Anglo-American alliance if they get cut out. It's the chessboard.
Right.
So I don't know, you know, they are dead set. If you look at what's happening in the Ukraine, I don't know if you saw this latest headline about drones, but if they're going to send drones to Ukraine, the only way those drones can operate was with American satellites. And then you're talking about an act of war.
Yeah.
If you send a drone into Russian airspace that does something negative, you know, that's the U.S. That's an act of war by the U.S. if it's U.S. satellites, even if you say you gave the drones to Ukraine.
It's so crazy.
No, it's not crazy. They're trying to start a war. They want a war. Now, the problem is, I don't see how you win a war.
Right.
But maybe they don't want to win the war. I don't know.
Do you know that you maybe saw this, but Kissinger himself at 98 came out and said, you know, you can't have a full-on war with Russia. It's too risky for the United States. Take a portion of the Ukraine and cede it to Russia. So even that old guard, which was not really, you know, which built the deep state, even they are looking at these guys and saying, whoa, what are you doing?
Richard Haass in 2004 wrote a fabulous piece in Foreign Affairs magazine where he basically, in a very, you know, I would say overly gracious way, said that the neocons were going to get us killed and they should back off. It's really remarkable. And it's funny because, you know, it reminds me in Washington, you would see these industries that knew how to play long ball. You know, I'll never forget when I was I came in as assistant secretary and I found a letter the Mortgage Banker Association had written begging us to stop a multifamily fraud being done by one of the biggest multifamily players at the time. And what they were doing was absolutely fraudulent. And we were playing ball with them, you know, for all I know, it was probably part of the black budget stuff. But the Mortgage Banking Association knew that kind of fraud was going to be terrible for the industry. And in fact, when it blew up, it was terrible for the industry to deal with it and manage it. So here you have an industry reporting its own corruption and asking the government to please stop it.
Amazing.
You know, and yeah, no, it was amazing. But, you know, if you look at that group that was in place then for the mortgage bankers, they knew how to play long ball. You know, they understood life is long. And you get these people who would come into Washington, they didn't understand long ball. And they would just, you know, they were trying to get the maximum this year. And they didn't know how to play long ball. And that's really, that spirit, from what I can tell, has taken hold.
Amazing.
So yeah. I don't think, you know, I've always assumed the neocons don't care what happens to America as long as they, you know, have their money parked in a safe place. And the question is, do they really think they can do that? I mean, here's the thing. I walked out in 1998 because I thought the plan would fail. So
yeah, right.
Right. I don't think, you know, you can't globalize and continue to pretend that you have the benefit of financial liquidity because you have the rule of law when you're not practicing the rule of law openly, patently, obviously, you know, and your all your financial liquidity and the power of your financial markets depends on people believing, you know, that you're practicing rule of law and their money is safe. And you've just announced to the world through the Canadian truckers that, you know, your system is not trustworthy. That's, you know, for the Anglo-American Alliance to admit that publicly in that way.
Incredible.
That is the end of an era.
Yeah. Yes. That's very interesting because, that Rockefeller, Kissinger, old guard, they were involved in deep state consolidation, but like you're saying, they knew how to play it long, and they also were very worried about public perception. These guys aren't.
Well, but here's the thing. If you look at that syndicate, you know, they engineered four assassinations.
Yes.
In the 60s that I think, you know, if they look back, it was a mistake what they did and how they did it. And I think it took the country in a bad way. And they were never able to recoup from it. I don't think they saw that.
Right, right. I mean, they were up to their necks in that level of corruption. It's interesting you mention this because I don't know if you follow Judge Napolitano at all, but he comes out.
You know, periodically I'll go in and look at what he's doing and then I go out. And so I haven't been looking at him recently, but he is fun to watch.
He is fun to watch. He talked about when he was friends with Trump during Trump's presidency before they had a falling out, and that he was talking to him about the Kennedy records and that Trump was really gung-ho about getting the Kennedy records out. And that when the time came, Trump became incredibly reluctant to do it. And Napolitano heard about this and he got in touch with him and he said, "What's going on?" And Trump said, "You don't understand. I can't release those records." And Napolitano said, "What's the problem? You know, basically you promised don't treat the American people like children, let the records out." And he said, "Andrew, you don't understand. If it was you, you wouldn't let them out either." Showing that there is actually something in the JFK assassination records that would seem to collapse the deep state if it were released.
I don't know, you know, and this is, you know, this is a very good example of what I always say. Don't be careful how you judge Mr. Global, because you don't know what you would do if you were in his shoes. You know, just pretend for a second you would do exactly what he's doing. What's the, you know, write the movie script behind that one.
Yeah.
Right.
Very interesting. I instantly went to UFO file. Not as a knee-jerk thing, but I thought, what is it really that could be in there that they wouldn't be able to release? Because if you said, well, the CIA is tied in with this, yeah, the CIA would try to block that, but pretty much everyone knows that the CIA was involved with this. So that can't be what Trump is talking about.
Well, it'd be interesting to have a conversation about what, you know, what in theory could it be?
Yes.
You know, the one that always most concerns me are the geophysical risks. Why did we suddenly need to become a multiplanetary civilization on a crash basis? And is it because of a geophysical risk? And absolutely, they believe the world is much better off not knowing. And the future of the human race is much better off not knowing.
And what do you think it is?
You know something? I really don't know. I mean, you know, Farrell and I did a 2-hour conversation called Who is Mr. Global, where we go through all the different theories.
Excellent.
And I said, I'm not going to, you know, I don't have a hypothesis, but I'm going to walk you through all the different theories. And it's really funny because when I first started to dig down into the narcotics trafficking, I would run into these. I was on the CIA drug list that Chris Milligan started, which was a hoot. And one of the things is you had this huge fight going on. You had one group who says, it's the Jews. And the next group saying, it's the Vatican. And the third group saying, no, it's the Masons. And I kept saying, look, you know, you can't run this without all three groups participating together, collaborating, yes, you know, together. Yeah. Anyway, but I realized we got down in the discussion, and we never made it to that squabble of, you know, is it the Vatican? Is it the aristocracy? Is it the Masons? Is it the, you know, who is it? And because we were staying at such a high level, and I thought that's pretty funny, you know, because we're trying to get people up there to look at that high level. I don't really know. All I can tell you is if you look at what I can't get the general population to deal with in terms of all the basic tactics. I mean, I can't tell you how many educated, intelligent people I know who really think mass hypnosis formation is a legitimate theory. It's like, you can't be kidding me, you know? So it's astonishing to me. So if I can't make headway on that, you know, how in the world am I going to make headway on, you know?
Right, right.
Absolutely. Where do those minds really go? I did a project with a wonderful researcher for 2 years where we sat down and we tried to figure out, we took all the different rumors or allegations about underground bases or government information about underground bases, and we tried to make a list of all the underground bases in the United States. We went through every state, every map, looked at the whole thing. Because I was trying to cost out of the $21 trillion how much would have gone to build or maintain the underground bases.
Right.
You know, so I spent a lot of time looking at what the available evidence is on underground bases. And what I will tell you is it's very significant. You know, we're talking very significant financial investment. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's inconceivable to me that they don't have Hyperloop trains traveling back and forth between all of that stuff. And, you know, I've heard enough whistleblower information to suggest that they probably do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but if you can't get someone to understand and look at that, you know, how are you going to go through the, anyway, so we did the hypothesis of, you know, what are all the theories of who is Mr. Global, and it's there. And we got a lot of very positive feedback on it.
Fantastic.
You know,
fantastic.
Yeah. So, but to me, here's the thing. It's we have such a wide perception of such a wide difference of perception and reality between the people at the top and the people in the middle and the people at the bottom. And yeah. You're talking about a society that without financial prices and liquidity and without transparency, you can't gather into any kind of consensus or alignment.
Yes.
That's what causes the incoherence. And they think they can solve it with complete central control. I don't think it's going to work. But I don't underestimate their ability to kill an extraordinary amount of people on the way to failure.
Yes. Yeah, they've always been good at that. But now they, you know, have the tools to be even more efficient. And you've pointed out before that these are people who believe in slavery.
Right. It works. Slavery is fantastically profitable. You couldn't have the control you have now without slavery. Mm-hmm. So slavery works. Go back and read the history of the African American slave trade. If you look at the reasons why they ended it, they've solved that with digital technology. They can perfect collateral now.
Yes.
Right.
That's the danger, right. Really. And, let's move that into space with Mr. Musk for a moment here. Musk comes along, of course, unusual, his story for acquiring PayPal, SpaceX, and all the rest. But then moves to get Twitter and all these different things as a result. This is somebody who is moving into that position. And during the beginning of the Ukraine thing, said, hey, I'm going to provide you with satellites and Starlink so you'll be able to communicate even if the Russians shut off your internet, which is basically involving a corporation in an act of war, in a sense, along the lines of what you were talking about earlier. Are they setting up a kind of space precedent there with Musk?
So I'm assuming that Musk's role is to build the smart grid infrastructure out and make it fashionable. So I just think he's building out different parts of the smart grid infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what Twitter was about. I assumed it was because Twitter was losing its utility to the intelligence agencies. You know, the brand was really harmed. And so this was part of trying to reaffirm the brand.
Okay, yes.
But I don't. You know, it's really funny because the most... Our theme this week, every week on Money and Markets, we have a theme. And our theme this week is keep your eye on the ball. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, life right now is like those old game shows where you get the money if you keep your eye on whatever it is and you don't look at the 800-pound gorilla that's wrecking the stage around you. You know what I mean? And, you know, there's all these distractions going on. And to me, Musk is one of them. He's just building the smart grid. That's what he does. And he makes it fashionable. And I, you know, I just, occasionally I just had a subscriber write a very detailed analysis of his real operations and what he's doing. Mm-hmm. It was quite interesting. And, but generally I just don't pay any attention to the guys, you know, building the smart grid other than to just try and check in where they are in terms of, you know, putting the world into digital concentration camps.
He talks about preserving the light of consciousness by going to Mars. Language like that, I think, is interesting and unusual. And so it makes me think that's more of like, you know, a kind of a secret society piece that he's a part of.
You know, I think part of making the smart grid fashionable is making space and space travel fashionable.
Right.
So, and, you know, I sympathize because we should become a multi-planetary civilization. So, you know, on these key points, I absolutely agree with Mr. Global. So, and here's the problem. If you do want to become a multi-planetary civilization, then you need a central bank that can deal. You know, one of the reasons the boys in New York wanted a U.S. central bank is they wanted somebody to, you know, play financial bazooka vis-a-vis Europe and Asia, you know, in the other parts of the world. So part of your push for centralization is if you're going to be dealing on a multi-planetary level, you need a way to, you know, to speak with one voice here on Earth. Otherwise, you have real problems. One of the things I wanted to mention, you know, you just did a wonderful interview with Joseph Farrell.
Yes.
And every quarter we do a News Transit Stories wrap up with Joseph. That is one of the highlights of my year, or four of the highlights of my year, because we do it four times. And we work very hard to pull together and sift through and look at, you know, what are the trends that are happening, the trends that we've been tracking, what are the new trends appearing, what are the top stories? If you're just going to listen with a few hours, you know, how can we help a really busy person understand what's going on in the world with just, you know, listening to that once a quarter, and then they know as much as anybody in the room. So that's kind of our goal. And anyway, as I was going through the stories, what I realized, Daniel, was that it was impossible to keep people focused on what was important because there were so many headlines about stuff that is completely bizarre.
Mm.
And some of these stories are important because the phenomena that they're talking about is truly, you know, what's happening in technology can be truly bizarre. But also just seeing the extent to which the shriekometer is trying to distract you with this stuff. You know, sometimes I want to use them as an example, but I thought, you know, my whole presentation is being overwhelmed by what I call bizarro world.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going to create a new section called Bizarro World, and we're going to move all the Bizarro World stories into Bizarro World and with like a lead container. You know, so that it's there. We're not ignoring it. It's there. We'll treat it. We'll deal with it. But it won't distract you from focusing on the fact you know, that your food prices may go up significantly. And that's what's important. And that's what you got to focus on. Anyway, so we're going to have a new section in the second quarter called Bizarro World.
Excellent. That's true. Oh, well, the reports are amazing. Well, you said trichometer there. I have to think monkeypox immediately.
Right. Monkeypox. Yeah, well, Doctors for COVID Ethics, Winnie Webb is going to come in and do a presentation on, she calls it biosecurity bailouts. Because the guys who made money on the anthrax and the guys who made money on COVID-19, now they're going to make money on monkeypox. And she's looked at some of the stocks. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Interesting. They're lining that one up. They inserted it immediately after the COVID sort of went into this different era. I'm not saying that they wouldn't even bring that back, but it seemed like they had reached public exhaustion level that was beyond the point.
Well, but if you look, you know, and again, I'm not there, but what I'm seeing is monkeypox is not going because it's too much of a joke. You know what I mean? I mean, did you see the one, there was a whistleblower pointed out, a virologist at CDC got fired because he refused to certify something as a monkeypox case because, in fact, the picture came from something that had happened like 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think the consciousness on these things, on these games, has shifted.
Okay.
So, but I don't think monkeypox seems to be working.
Yes. Well, I thought it was interesting when they came out with monkeypox, they were like, oh, it's been traded among all these gay men at this festival. That's where,
right.
You know, and I was like, that sounds like, what was this, 1985? I mean, you know.
Right. you know, I don't know. And I think that's one of the reasons it feels like Bizarro World, because you have various people and efforts trying to try these things, and they're just trying to see if they can get it to go.
Right.
One of the things that went wrong for them was, you know, immediately the pictures started coming about of Bill Gates with dollar signs on his face saying moneypox. Moneypox.
That'll do.
Catherine, absolutely fascinating. Let's do one more long segment and go deeper still on these issues. The conversation continues at darkjournalist.com. You don't want to miss it. Of course, all of Catherine's new Solari reports are available at solari.com. Join us this Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the X Series. See you there.